Last time on Video Night.
But it's terrible.
It's a super dumb, fun piece of crap.
It's awful.
And now.
Video Night. So, this is the second time I'm introducing an episode of a podcast that I've done, this time with you, Michael, that features Bill Paxton's work. It's kind of a bummer, actually, that we're doing this because Bill Paxton just passed while under the knife for Heartwork. Except we're here to celebrate. At least celebrate some of his weirdest movies.
Yeah. So, anybody who listens to Video Night knows that the first episode of this I did with Jacob, where we talked about the really mainstream stuff. Kind of touched upon, like, his big supporting roles and a few of the leads, like Twister and stuff like that, Mighty Joe Young. This episode is more about the independent, the alternative, the weird movies that he would star.
The hidden gems.
Yeah, and now we're not doing
stuff that
all
people
of them.
Said.
Yeah.
Huh? What? Bill? What? No. Nah, never mind.
That's what people said about these movies.
Yeah.
Except for one of them, actually.
The list of great Bill Paxton movies is massive, and there's no way we're going to be able to tackle them in just two episodes, but we found a way to add a few of his movies to future episodes. So, yes, we're not talking about Near Dark right now. We're going to add that to a vampire episode later. No, we're not going to talk about Trespass. That is also part of an episode later this year. This one is kind of focused on the really strange ones, and a couple were studio releases, but in independent-minded, I think, in their approach.
Yeah. Now, the very first one, which is going alphabetically here, is a movie that hit the theaters and left the theaters in just about as much time as I said that sentence. It went nowhere, like nothing.
Yeah, it was, and it was from Fox's independent, kind of like, what they call Fox Searchlight, which is kind of like their independent wing, where they would either pick up films.
Yeah, how is Fox Searchlight gonna release Club Dread?
The warped minds behind Super Troopers.
He's already pulled over! He can't pull over any farther!
Used to be the Fuzz.
Yeah, fiesta time! Are you ready to party?
Now they're catching a buzz.
So you came here to escape civilization, and we're gonna hold you to it.
In this tropical paradise.
Lars Brunkhorst, I'm the new masseur. We swapped out a 6-foot Swedish broad for this guy. I'm 6'1".
Everyone's got to stick together.
Whoa, 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 Code Red, bogey, bogey.
Oh, dude, check out that. What's up? Dude, don't be gay, man.
If they don't want to get whacked.
What?
And they're either getting killed.
Are you telling me there's some totally deranged dude running around out there?
Or getting lucky.
Is it too much to ask? Have sex with the guests. Some of them are bad looking.
There's Putman the tennis pro.
You've got your arms around me, Jenny. I can only assume this means every other man on the island is dead.
Juan, the dive master.
That is a beautiful name. Penelope.
Lars, the masseur.
I can see how tight you are from a mile away.
What can I say? Some girls are just tighter than others.
Sam, the fun police.
Who wants to limbo?
Dave, the DJ.
If you're the killer, that's cool. Just, you know, don't kill me.
It could be anyone. If you're dying for a vacation, join the club.
Oh, yeah!
Broken Lizards, Club Dread.
That's just bizarre to me.
Well, I mean, they had done Super Troopers, so I think they just had a contract for another movie with Broken Lizard. And it... I don't think they understood the movie. I, in fact, hated the movie the first time I saw it. I thought it was a huge drop down from Super Troopers, and always lamented the fact that they should have done Beer Fest instead. You know, done that in 2004, and maybe they would have built up their career. But they did this. Club Dread bombed horribly. Beer Fest did okay, but I think the studios had kind of washed their hands of them, and then I think the next few movies they did with Millennium Pictures and whoever would pick that up.
Now, but did you see Club Dread in the theater?
No, no.
I did, and I was like, okay, that is a movie. That is what it is. It's a slasher movie and a comedy at once. It's not a traditional spoof or parody. It's a legitimate slasher movie.
Yeah, its humor comes out of people's ridiculous behavior, but not a spoof of any, like, cliche of a genre like the way they usually are.
Right. I mean, yes, it is. Okay, here's the one of the best things, and it's in both versions. Now, I have the extended cut, which I favor over the director's cut because it adds more character work with the two investigators that come in. But the cliches, especially at the very beginning, when they set up anybody who might have a motive to kill anybody in the story, who's the killer, they get to that ahead of time, like right off the bat. So people arrive on the island. What it is super fancy pants island, tropical, it's not even fancy, it's a tropical island with Coconut Pete. Jimmy Buffett and he are rivals, and Bill Paxton plays Coconut Pete.
Which you don't know. You don't know this at all, because the whole time you're like, are they just doing a parody of Jimmy Buffett? But in this world, Jimmy Buffett does exist, and he's a rival. Yeah. My favorite scene in this is isn't that have nothing to do with the horror movie part. It's when they're around the campfire, and that drunk girl's like,
play Margarita Bill!
Excuse me?
Play Margarita Bill. I love that song.
Darling, I think you're referring to my song Pina Colada Burke.
No, Margarita Bill.
Think you mean Pina Colada Burke. The song I wrote 7.5 years before Margaritaville was even on the map. Of course, you wouldn't know that because you weren't even born yet.
Come on, Hawkshaw, let's get us a drink.
I don't need to shit.
Come on, man.
Son of a bitch.
Which, I'll tell you, son of a bitch, being a person who doesn't listen to Jimmy Buffett, who later learned that that's a Jimmy Buffett reference, son of a sailor,
yeah,
is actually way funnier now that I have that knowledge.
I'm a little ashamed. I'm kind of a parrot head.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. My roommate, sophomore year of college, had a ton of Jimmy Buffett CDs. And then all my friends were, like, kind of into it. And I think we had, like, one. My dad had, like, Banana Wind or something like that, and it was pretty good. But then we found ourselves listening to Jimmy Buffett all the time, and I know his catalog almost by heart. It's ridiculous. In fact, I think his greatest hits album is called ridiculous. Songs You Know By Heart.
So the island is just a spring break getaway that Jimmy Buffett, Coconut Pete, set up to, you know, just rake in the dough, but the place is actually kind of dwindling. They're gonna have to sell. But all the staffers don't really know that, and each staffer is introduced in this one scene where a brand new staffer, a masseuse, a very large guy, is replacing the old masseuse. And what's his name? Lars Bronkhorst?
Yeah. Played by Kevin Heffernan, who I think is actually the best cast member of Broken Lizard. And in fact, I think he's the only one to really act outside of their group.
Yeah, he's actually also... No, he's not. The DJ guy also acts outside of his group.
Does he?
But,
I've never seen him before.
Yeah, he was in this horror movie called Something of Cain. Oh.
By the way, that dude, the DJ guy, looks exactly like my brother-in-law. It's disturbing.
Maybe he is your brother-in-law. Doppelganger or Secret Identity. So they establish through this sort of a montage. The guy comes through and meets various characters who are the staff. And each time those staff members have an interaction with somebody else, somebody slights them, and the camera hangs on that actor a little bit with his, like, squinty eye.
Yeah.
And this, like, stinger note of, like, this guy could be the bad guy.
Yeah, what movie is that from? Was it from Sleepaway Camp where they start doing that little cliche?
I really don't know, because I've seen Sleepaway Camp a bunch, and I don't really notice that.
I remember. It may have been Friday the 13th, but there's some movie where that's the first time I ever saw something like that, where you're like, is that the villain? You're like, shoo, shoo, shoo. And the camera's like really
Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, something suspicious here. Like, the DJ guy gives some ecstasies to a girl and puts it in her drinks, and he's like, can I get one of those? And she's like, no. And then, like, the camera slow-mos on his face, and that stinger note comes up, and he's like, uh-huh. And he tilts his glasses down and looks at her like, oh, I hate you. Very funny film.
You know what I'm starting to think is you're right. I don't know why I said that. It does play on some of the cliches. There's a cliche we'll get to at the end, which is a big part of the slasher genre that it spoofed.
It does play on conventions of all slasher movies that had come previous.
Well,
but
when it comes
it's not Scream meta knowledge about killers and I know movies and stuff. It's not like that. And it's not a Naked Gun or Scary Movie type of spoof.
Right. It's not.
It's a thing
there
unto
is,
itself.
The kills itself have a little bit of weight, whereas, like, if it was done, like, Scary Movie wise, everything is purely set up for the laugh. Not the plot, not the fear, for the joke. Whereas,
right. You know, this, like, they're just kills.
It seems like the humor in Club Dread is just a couple years ahead of time. Like, it would fit perfectly in that Judd Apatow, like, oddball behavior, kind of mumbly, rambling, improv kind of comedy.
Except I don't feel it's totally improv. I think the two dudes that are secretly closeted gay dudes are the strongest improv in the movie. Those are the guys that are kind of oblivious to everything that's going around them, and they're constantly talking about how hot chicks are.
Want to get nailed? Okay, maybe later.
Come on.
You want to be grilled by Manny.
Yeah.
That's the chick on that TV show, A.M. Pump Up, with Amy Aerobics.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's the one on the way back.
Dude, she was. But then the chick by the palm tree died, so she got promoted to palm tree. And then Amy Aerobics died, and so she's the new number one chick. Dude, she's the new Amy Aerobics.
Whoa, Amy Aerobics died? What did she die of?
She didn't die of a fat ass, I'll tell you that, bro.
And then they, like, turn to each other and sort of fondle each other. And
what's up? Dude, don't be gay, man.
Those two guys.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, boy.
And they pop up in various scenes, and there was one guy who's like,
can I make the lizard take her bikini top off?
No, that would be illegal.
Yeah, that's what she said. That's what she said!
You know, it's just, there's actually a lot of real type humor that would happen among people, like the that's what she said joke. Real people, you and your friends, me and my friends. But beyond that, the humor is kind of snide towards who the characters really represent. The college age frat sorority people. Yeah, it's actually kind of a backhand towards them, I think. But I don't think it's actually mean. It's weird. It's a very strange balance that they struck in the film. Now, Bill Paxton, let's talk about him.
Oh my god, is he so good? Is there a movie that he ever gave a bad performance in? Because every time he shows up in any movie, I am absolutely delighted. I don't think he should have been a lead in Twister. You know, I think that kind of changed his career.
Right.
But I think he was also smart enough after, like, what, 6 years of doing that he stepped back and he did some other smaller movies. But when you watch him in this, it's just like, that's exactly what you love about Bill Paxton. So he'll grab a character role and just hit a home run. Just go all in.
Now, all of the songs in this.
Oh, I want the soundtrack. I want that soundtrack.
They're him. He wrote those songs. He didn't just perform them, he wrote them. Now, you guys may not know, Bill Paxton also was in a band in the 80s called Martini Ranch.
Is he involved in Fish Heads? Fish Heads.
He directed that short, Fish Heads. I don't know if he did the music for it, but he definitely directed the music video, whatever.
Uh-huh.
And Dr. Demento got a hold of that and pushed that really hard. SNL pushed it. And then in the 80s, from like 86 to 88 was when they made their one release. And it was Martini Ranch. Holy cow. That's the name of the album. That stuff's weird, bizarre. They have a song called Hot Dog. They have a song called Reach, which is like, reach for the sky, bucko. And that video was directed. It's actually probably one of the best looking things James Cameron's ever directed. I'm putting it out there on record. It's like he went spaghetti western with this whole thing.
Huh.
Just visually camera angles and stuff that you would never see James Cameron ever approach. Ever again. But he has this musical background, so they got him to be in this movie, and he did all the songs, which are all double entendre. Dude, the album titles are Sea Shanties and Wet Panties. That's like one album title. I mean, yeah, okay, it's a rated R movie, okay? But Bill Paxton really knocks it out. Him and the guy Hank, his second hand, they're always together in the film.
They were actually really good friends. Right. I remember listening to the podcast where he talks to Marc Maron, sadly, like, right before he passed. But he's good friends. Like, what is his name? I always call him Swamp Thing from Con Air, but MC Gainey.
Okay, yeah, him. Big dude, he was in Lost. They're always together in every scene. There's a really good scene where there's another character named Yu. She's an Asian girl. And
Pete, you and Hank are dead.
Why? What did we do?
No, man. You and Hank are dead.
You threatening me? Because if you are, you little hairless lapdog.
Ay, puta! Just come and look!
It's so funny! It's so really funny. Gosh. I really do like Club Dread. And it's all the jokes. You know, the jokes are also really very subtle. There are obvious jokes, but then the humor throughout is very subtle.
Can I say this? The first half hour is miserable. I really think that most of the jokes fail. Like, where they're spitting each other's face, and a lot of it's stupid, filthy, and I mean, not that I'm a prude or anything, but I feel a lot of it was like, oh, this feels like, okay, so when this came out, Euro Trip had come out.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that movie. That movie came out, like, I think the same week or the week afterwards, and we got Euro Trip instead of Club Dread. And I remember watching that thinking that it was written by two different people. One writer was like, let's get American Pie, and the other one was like, let's do kind of a weirdo National Lampoon Vacation kind of movie.
Right,
and they are like, one scene's really, really funny, like with the robot, and then the next scene is just terrible, funny, terrible, funny, terrible, weird, generic. That's what it felt like for that first half hour of Club Dread. Like, it could not find its identity.
Yeah, because they're just trying to establish everything. Especially in the long version, you get, after that half hour, you get like this greatness afterwards. But you're right. It's a bit
It's long as hell. The director's cut is like 2 hours. It seems strange that it's 2 hours long, but it does get better, like I said, in the half hour. I think it's once you get to the chase sequence in the Pac-Man the little maze, which I thought was a brilliant little gag.
You really never played this game as a kid?
We had a cheap Nicaraguan version called the Circle Eater back, you know.
That kind of kicks things into high gear. Like, that's an interesting idea, and it kind of builds from there, and you get more Bill Paxton, who is the best character and the most entertaining character in this movie.
Yeah, man, just watch it. Find it, watch it. Even the short director's cut, the theatrical cut, is technically the director's cut. Watch that. I mean, they cut things for, I think, efficiency and time type of thing, but... yeah, just watch any version of it. It's going to be good. Now, the second time I watched it, I watched the longest version, and I was much more rewarded.
I think they add a lot more footage to the end. And the cliche we were talking about earlier is how they play on how the killer is never actually dead.
Yeah, it keeps coming
back.
And
they keep going and going to, like, ridiculous levels. And I don't remember it being that long, but I thought that was pretty funny. I was like, oh, there's no way. Oh, well, I guess he's still going. Holy crap.
He's like half a dude, and he keeps coming. He's literally chopped in half from the waist. Eventually, at the very end as well, his legs are just going. Like, it's just so stupid. That's, like, the one part in the movie where you go, oh, geez, really? But then have to go, wait, I watched the rest of the movie, and that's pretty silly, too.
Yeah. I kept thinking of Basket Case, and the absurdity that little creature in a basket could kill all those people. I was like, no. It's like one arm. It's one arm and a gross head. That's it. How is it killing all these people?
Right. Super strong.
We attempted Monolith. It was okay.
Yeah, it's all right.
But, like, you agreed with me that the budget was way too low for the idea presented.
Yeah.
And John Ayers had potential. I thought his first movie, Project Shadow Chaser, was very entertaining, low budget, like Terminator meets Die Hard. And this was his follow-up, but it doesn't work. Bill Paxton is actually kind of a tool. He's not that likable in this movie.
Well, I don't know if he's not that likable, but he and the lady, Lindsay Frost, actually... Mark Frost, who wrote Twin Peaks, it's his sister. She and he are very abrasive towards each other for much of the film. Third act, they kind of warm up to each other. And what I noted, though, is the visuals of the film were confused. Because of the budget, it had, like, this really cool lens work, and then suddenly it looks like it's shot for straight to video home release, and then it looks like it's big,
like,
budget movie for a second, and then it flips back and forth per scene that they had the money for, I guess. It did.
I get the feeling that Universal saw the dailies and then probably pulled back.
Maybe that. Now, what's the other film?
The other one was Brain Damage with Bill Pullman. Bill Paxton's a support in this one, and this kind of brings about the whole Bill Paxton, Bill Pullman, like, connection.
Confusion.
People got confused for many years about who was who.
I never did. I don't get it. I never did.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's like the Dermot Mulroney, Dylan McDermott. I've always known the difference, but a lot of people don't. I guess that's just a thing.
But when I'm saying Dylan McDermott or Dermot Mulroney, I confuse their names, but I know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But Bill Pullman and Bill Paxton. Bill Pullman's just a brain scientist, and he's trying to do some stuff, and they gotta get some memories out of Bud Cort or stop those memories. And Bill Paxton is the guy that puts Bill Pullman on the job. But the movie's really boring and dull and flat.
Oh, yeah, well, it's a Corman film. Honestly, has Corman put together anything really worthwhile? At best, it's a time waster. Blood Fist, time waster. What's that one with Andrew Stevens, From Within, or whatever? It's like a handful of movies are good time wasters, but nothing...
Nope.
Nothing like his heyday of the 70s, and even that wasn't that good. I could probably name 5 movies that are worth discussing of Roger Corman, and that's about it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Corman, even though he's
legendary for finding cheap talent that would blossom later. He's not so good at making a quality movie.
Yeah.
In fact, we could probably do an episode on good Roger Corman movies, and we'd be done. We're like, oh, we got 4. We got Rock and Roll High School, Piranha, you know, and we'd search around the other 2. Death Race 2000 or something like that. But in the 90s, he just specifically made movies that were...
Oh, yeah, everything was bad.
It's just cable filler. It's just stuff for the VHS market as it was burgeoning. I watched it because, you know, I thought it'd be a Bill Paxton movie, but he's only kind of in it. He's, like, 3 significant scenes, and that's it. It's more of a Bill Pullman movie. So, besides the fact it was boring, I didn't think it was appropriate to really go into.
So... this next film is also from the early 90s, Dark Backward.
Ladies and gentlemen, won't you please give a warm welcome to the comedy stylings of Mr. Marty Malt.
Marty Malt has to be the worst stand-up comic I have ever had the misfortune to see.
What are you being so picky for?
I'm reminded tonight of something that happened to me the other day. I went to the post office to get some stamps, and this giant boot came down from the ceiling and stamped me on the head.
Even you didn't laugh.
I was laughing on the inside.
You're not funny, Mark.
Oh, you got a bite, man.
What?
On your back, a bug bite or something.
The doctor will see you now.
Here's where your problem is. We could always cut it off.
Marty, what happened?
Look at your lung.
I am sick and tired of you little mama boys coming in here every time you have an abrasion or a hand growing on the back or whatever.
Look, Marty, it's all over between the two of us.
We'd like to book him on next week's show.
We're going to Hollywood!
Starring Judd Nelson.
My name is Marty Mall.
Bill Paxton.
It's Gussie Pussy.
Wayne Newton.
Yes, Jackie Chrome.
Lara Flynn Boyle.
I love you, Marty Mall.
James Caan.
I'm a doctor.
Rob Lowe.
Dirk Delta.
The Dark Backward.
We're going to Hollywood, and we're going to be big stars.
That's my boy!
Oh my God, what an amazing movie. I hadn't seen this since it was on HBO, probably 25 years ago. And I remember being fascinated by its weirdness. Like, it's very, very specific in its vision and tone. And there were a few movies around this time that were like this. And never really to be made again. You know, like something made for cult audiences, independent theaters. And studios aren't interested in that anymore.
Yeah, not at all. There's, I think if you do a movie that's audience specific now, it's that stuff by Brain Damage Pictures or whatever.
Well, we got Dark Sky and we have Magnolia and Magnet. They still do stuff, but nothing wide release. This is, if Dark Backward was made today, I'm sure that Magnet would have picked it up and put it like on 60 screens.
Oh,
but
sure,
specifically
yeah,
though, to sell like on TV.
Yeah, maybe Shout. Shout has produced or released original materials, or not original for them. They haven't produced the material, but they have bought films that are current.
Yeah.
But they're usually not that good, honestly. And this one is actually really strangely good. It seems really negative until the very end, in which it's an uplifting ending. But Marty Malt is a stand-up comedian who sucks. He's the worst. Bill Paxton is his best buddy, who, during the day, they are trash men. And in the evening, they both moonlight as entertainers. Marty is the crappiest stand-up comedian, and Bill Pullman... Excuse me. I did it!
Aha! All right, everybody, take a drink.
And Bill Paxton is an accordion player. He's also a super creep.
Yeah, this is the slimiest movie. If street trash didn't exist, I would say this is the greasiest, slimiest, like grindhouse kind of movie I've ever seen. It's wet. It's just sweaty.
Yeah, so the big deal about this is that Marty Malt grows an arm out of his back. Not on purpose, it just happens. And that is the gimmick that gets him some sort of fame, but it's not on his talent at all. And Paxton and Wayne Newton are there to exploit that. And it's a showbiz movie, and I hate showbiz movies, but I like this movie.
I love showbiz movies. By the way, you just said that, it was on accident. He didn't do it on purpose. Can you purposely grow an arm out of your back? If so, tell me how this is possible.
No, I was just making a reference to the movie.
Oh. Is there a joke?
She freaks out on him, and he's like, well, I didn't do it on purpose.
You know the movie Freak. Is there a joke in that movie about Dark Backward?
I don't know.
You remember the kid from Blossom? When they're on the airplane, he has a hand out of his zipper, whatever, and...
That doctor told me not to scratch
Yeah.
It. Where'd you get that?
I don't know, Coog. It started as a pimple, and then I scratched it.
Is that a reference to Dark Backwards?
I didn't realize. Maybe it is.
A nod to another weirdo movie. It just seemed like something that's what they were kind of throwing at. I mean, it's such an insider
joke. Because James
Caan
says don't pick at it. James Caan is... This is my favorite James Caan role, by the way. You're, like, talking about... You like James Caan and this, that, and, like...
I do. I love James Caan.
No. I like him in this movie.
What is it?
Will you wait? I'm a professional. Would you like for me to jump on a misconclusion? Diagnose you and send you off in a coma? You'd like that, man?
Really, it's really crazy, and he's such a dick.
Yeah.
But his like, delivery... What do we do about it? Just put a band-aid on it.
His gruff delivery is great. So, what makes this movie fascinating is the setting. It's a world that's built based on familiarity in Americana, but more like if the 50s, I don't even know what setting it, what it doesn't have technology like we have, but it doesn't feel like it's set in the 50s. It would be as if nothing changed from the 50s to the 90s, except everything got disgusting.
Yeah.
And weathered.
Oh, there's a moment in this that'll make your skin crawl in the junkyard. Naked body. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. That really Holy bothered me. Creeped me out. Now, I have another podcast called What Did We Just Watch? And we just covered this. This is the second time we're talking about Dark Backward and second time we're talking about Bill Paxton stuff. That's what I was referencing to when I opened the show. So there's a deeper dive into this movie on that podcast. So go check that out if you really want to listen to more about this very strange and fascinating film.
Let's save ourselves and the audience some time. We'll just have you, you'll go more in depth with that one. This allows us to focus more on Vagrant. And originally Dark Backward wasn't part of our list. It was, you know, but we end up bailing on two of the other ones. And suddenly,
yeah, so it was like
Club Dread and Dark Backwards.
Put that in. Dark Backwards, it's good. In the uplifting ending, he finally gets his laughs. But man, is it weird.
Yeah, it's one of the strangest movies. Adam Rifkin, is that the director?
Yes.
I don't think he ever touched this kind of weirdness ever again.
No, I don't think
so. He's more of a writer now. I think he did a fantastic job with Mouse Hunt. Him and Gore Verbinski did a really great job together, bringing like what could have been a generic like live action kind of like Looney Tunes thing.
Yeah, it's Gore Verbinski doing visuals though. And yeah. I think actually a little bit of the grime is held over into Mouse Hunt too.
Yeah,
if
definitely.
You think about it.
It's an odd movie.
Dilapidated old house. Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's also some weird, gross behavior out of Christopher Walken and stuff like that. Is this on DVD at all? Or is this still only VHS?
Dark Backward is on DVD. It's probably hard to find. It might be out of print, but it did come out on DVD in 2007, maybe? And it seemed like Adam Rifkin on the DVD introduction materials was kind of confused as to why they were even putting it out. he talks really strangely. In the way that he talks, it's just very like, I don't know. It's not just the confusion sort of thing. It's just also the way simply he talks.
Yeah.
Interesting guy.
For the most part in his career, Bill Paxton played usually like eccentric, obnoxious, wild and crazy characters. I watched a movie last night that I have not seen since it was on TV like almost 30 years ago called Pass the Ammo. Very hard to find. Only on VHS or bootleg. Very entertaining. But he played a straight, normal character and he was the least interesting thing in it. It's a good movie. Tim Curry totally steals it. Annie Potts is great. But my God, he was so bland. And that's the problem when they try to take an actor like Bill Paxton and normalize his role. You know, like take out all the eccentricities and the unusual behavior.
So you say normalize, and this next film is one in which he does play an extremely normalized character, but I find him so endearing. And instead of stealing the scenes in a way of, like Dark Backward, where he's obnoxious, loud, and just a force to be reckoned with, here he's really subtle. He seems like a legitimate person. And he's gentle and quiet and kind and seemingly insane, if that can be. And this is the movie called Frailty.
You the agent in charge of the case?
That's right. What can I do for you, man?
Listen, this may sound a little bit crazy, but I know who the goddamn killer is.
What makes you think that?
You hadn't even heard me out yet, and already you doubt me.
They were raised to obey their father.
Go to Sonoma.
To love him. To trust him.
Night, boys. Sleep tight.
Don't let those bed bugs bite.
Until.
Wake up. I've got something to tell you.
Hey, what's wrong?
There are demons among us. I can see the demons while other people can.
I'm scared, Dad.
Nothing that crazy could be real.
The angel told me that God would be sending weapons.
Maybe you just dreamed it. Maybe you're not right in the head.
God will be sending a list of the first seven demons.
These are people's names.
And they'll look like people. They're not.
Dad made up this whole thing. Do you understand?
Well, if it has to be done, it has to be done.
Is that true?
Why would I make it up?
It's all a big lie. I don't want to run away.
You are hiding something from me.
What is it you think I'm hiding?
When I lay my hands on them, I'll reveal them for what they truly are.
I got a pretty good idea what them bodies are.
I'll tell.
Craziest thing I've heard in a long time.
Check the rose garden.
I don't believe a word of it.
But it's true.
Bill Paxton.
Those were demons. Why can't you see that?
Matthew McConaughey.
Tell me the truth.
Sometimes truth defies reason.
You're crazy!
Only demons should fear me. You're not a demon, are you?
Yeah, I had forgotten how insanely good this movie is. This might be his best film.
It probably is. He directed it, and I thought that he wrote it, but it was from another person's script. But the concept is, what if the crazy person who's talking to himself on the street is actually talking to God and isn't crazy, but doesn't know how to handle it?
Right.
Now take that further and have a sort of not... Don't even think this, but like a Buffy the Vampire Slayer sort of slant to it. You're a chosen one. You have to kill these demons. And then what? So it's handled in a much more different way than what I even described.
Right. It's not handled in a comic book fashion in any way whatsoever. It takes that concept, if it were to be real. You say you meet this person, you're usually like, boy, this person's crazy. I don't want to be anywhere near him. But if he's a family member, it's harder to deal with. And is he telling the truth? Is he crazy? What is your decision? Because you love this person. They're your family member. How do you handle something so extreme?
And that's really how the story unfolds. Matthew McConaughey shows up at the FBI, telling the FBI that he knows who the God's Hand Killer is, and goes about explaining his history with the God's Hand Killer.
An angel came to him and told him the truth of this world and revealed God's special purpose for our family.
The end of the world is coming. It's near. The angel showed me. There are demons among us. The devil has released them for the final battle. It's being fought right now. We've been chosen by God. He will protect us. He's given us special jobs to do.
I don't want to get into the twist and all this stuff because it's really clever and it's on Netflix. Go watch it. But Bill Paxton plays the father who has the vision. Stars three Texans, Powers Booth, Matthew McConaughey, and Bill Paxton.
Who are the kids? I know one of them's Jerry Sumpter, who's the littlest one, who'd gone to be in Peter Pan, but who is the main kid? He's really good. I know I've seen him in something else, but I can't recall what it is.
Oh, he was in one of the Spy Kids flicks. He was in that movie Stung, the recent movie, giant bug movie. It's actually not very good, and I wish it was, but the special effects are pretty good.
But nothing worthy of his talent. Giant.
His name's Matt O'Leary.
It just seems like he should be almost an A-lister. He's so insanely good in this movie, and to hear that he's probably in some sci-fi level horror BS doesn't make me happy.
Stung was a German-made film, came out in 2015, but he's doing just about nothing but indie flicks. He was in Pawn Shop Chronicles. He was also in Lone Ranger. He's had a stint on CSI, but he's a working actor.
Yeah, at least there's that. Well, I mean, sometimes just because you stop acting, though, doesn't mean that you're terrible at it. It just means, especially when you're a younger actor, if you leave the business, it doesn't mean that you couldn't get hired. It just, you know, you change. You decide you want to do something else. Many, many people walk away.
Oh, he was also in Brick, dude. He was in Brick.
Okay, I remember him from Brick now. Okay, that's a good play.
Yeah. So the kid has pedigree, really. And it starts with Frailty, I believe. You might say, It starts with Frailty. He was in a couple of other... Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire.
That's my favorite movie, Don't You Dare.
Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire?
No, wait. No, I'm sorry. I apologize. That's my favorite movie is My Mother's a Werewolf.
Oh, all right. The other mother monster movie. And then Frailty is his, like, really first big legit thing. And then he does the Spy Kids and stuff like that. And Brick and Havoc and Free and Die Hard.
Yeah, Frailty's an excellent film. There was one other movie we left off the list. We had kind of discussed, but neither one of us committed to it, but I watched it a couple days ago. Slipstream. Have you seen this one with Mark Hamill?
Yeah, I saw it a long time ago.
I used to think it was really, really slow and boring, but I actually kind of enjoyed what it was doing now. Strange movie. It's public domain. It's like on every single sci-fi set you've ever seen at a budget store.
Yeah, and they're always terrible picture quality. There's never like a widescreen version of it.
No. Well, this wasn't widescreen.
Oh, was it?
Mill Creek actually has a widescreen version of it, but it's still, it's compressed onto like a disc with five other movies, so it's really grainy. But I have a weird affection that's now growing, and it's probably your fault, of like British and Australian sci-fi films. They have a very specific look and style to them, but I actually enjoyed Slipstream better this time.
Yeah, I might be responsible.
Still stunned
for
that Gary Kurtz and the director of Tron, Steve Lisberger, had a movie that couldn't get released in America and went public domain almost instantly.
Yeah, it's weird how it's public domain and it's not that old.
Yeah, and I think it was a $12 million budget or something like that. The special effects, though there's few special effects, are really strong for its time period, but I was just like looking at it going, how the hell did they forget to file properly in America?
Yeah, back to Frailty real quick. I believe it has slipped by so many people. When you say Frailty, also, yeah. What's the title about? Why is it called Frailty? Nobody says the word frailty in the movie. The theory is that it's about the frailty of relationships.
I thought it meant of the mind, frailty of the mind, like something like that can just shatter.
That too. No, there's also there's that. There's like lots of different applications for the word frailty. Frailty of relationships, the frailty between the father and the son,
mm-hmm.
The frailty of a mind. Is it a person's mind that's broken and they're doing these terrible things, or are they not?
Yeah. You know? Is it weird that after this, his next movie would be like a Disney movie about golf, like in the 1920s, the Shia LaBeouf?
Yeah, it is actually weird. I haven't seen that one.
Nearby.
Bill Paxton directed that movie. Did he direct any more?
I think that's it. And then after that, he signed on to that TV show, Big Love.
All right, Big Love.
And that's when he stopped really doing movies for it. If you look at his IMDb, he pretty much came to a halt after he did that. And of course, he had the big comeback with Hatfields and McCoys. And then he started doing like support role and other stuff. Things got kind of...
He did smaller movies. Yeah. He did smaller sci-fi movies and stuff. The Colony.
That's
awesome. He was in Edge of Tomorrow.
Holy crap, how did we forget? I love The Colony. We should do that for a future episode. Maybe about like post-apocalyptic monsters or something.
Edge of Tomorrow, Nightcrawler. Yeah, he just did whatever he wanted to from that point. Big Love takes a lot of... It's from 2006 to 2011. It took a lot of time to devote to that story.
Yeah.
So it's like making... Like five films or something, you know?
Did you watch Training Day at all? I haven't seen a single episode. And sadly, now, of course, no. It's going to have to be canceled or modified in some way.
Yeah, I haven't. No, I haven't.
It seems weird that he's in it, but if you look at his roles, he's really good at playing your average Joe with kind of an edge and also kind of Looney Tunes demented characters. Which brings us to our final movie, Vagrant.
This next property is very well suited to your particular needs, Mr. Krakowski.
He saw it.
This house speaks to me. It says potential.
He loved it.
Well, I could even think about putting in a hot tub or maybe even a lanai.
A lanai, wow.
He bought it.
Owning a house is okay, but you're going to get an ulcer making the payments.
How'd you like to see yourself promoted?
Mr. Feimster, I certainly wouldn't mind that.
And how'd you like to see yourself fired?
I wouldn't like that at all, sir.
But now he's starting to lose it.
911 emergency.
I'd like to report a dangerous vagrant.
There's just one problem with Graham Krakowski's new home. He's not home alone.
Yeah! A bizarre, senseless murder took place last night.
Mrs. Aller's been murdered. There's this vagrant who lives across the street. He did it. I know it. And now he's in the kitchen.
You're acting like a maniac.
Just relax. The police are taking care of everything.
I'm attracted to you.
It's so sexy.
It's not often I get a nice young man like you to talk to.
It's scary. So scary. It's funny.
What could you possibly see?
So funny.
You seen a blue 78 Ford station wagon?
You mean like the one on fire out there?
It's a scream.
What if the authorities actually found out I killed her?
I see the dessert menu.
The Vagrant. There goes the neighborhood. One neighbor at a time.
He finds a way of playing both.
Yeah, okay, so first time I ever heard of Vagrant was when I joined something called Cinemageddon. Somebody actually posted an animated GIF of the Vagrant doing something naughty. And I think, you know,
yep.
It involves a rocking back and forth motion.
The old five-knuckle shuffle.
I was like, what is that? What is that grimy, horrible-looking man with a backlit in red or bright pink or whatever the color was, and it was garish, and it was just visually striking, actually, regardless of what was going on in the GIF. I then somehow found out what it was from, so I got a hold of Vagrant, and that movie is akin to Dark Backward in that it's a very acquired taste.
Yeah, super specific in its vision, you know? It's another one of those oddball, early 90s, low budget, but made specifically for, like, independent theaters or cult audiences on, like, HBO and video, you know? It's very low budget, but very specific in its vision.
As an attempt to be, like, a midnight film, perhaps?
Definitely.
So the movie is about Bill Paxton, who's just a working man, right? He's, what, an accountant or something?
Yeah, so he's kind of a white collar. He's borderline middle class, aiming for upper class, but he's kind of a schmuck, so it's hard for him to get where he wants to be.
And he's got a new house, and a vagrant shows up and just starts squatting. And you can't get rid of him.
So let's be very specific about how great Chris Wallace's direction and vision on this movie is. We talked about Fly 2 last year, and we liked it. It was a different beast than the David Cronenberg version, where it was full on, like, the destruction of man, seeing how man can fall apart, like a parable for cancer or disease in any way. And the second one was more like a 70s Marvel comic. It seemed more superhero-ish. You're kind of rooting for the ghastly villain in the first movie, but now he's a hero. This seemed like there was no studio meddling whatsoever. Mel Brooks raised the money, and it looks like he just stepped out of the way, which he was good at doing, like on Elephant Man and The Fly and stuff like that. And especially since it looked like it was low risk, maybe 1.5, maybe 2 million at most. You know everything you need to know about Bill Paxton in the first 2 or 3 minutes when he is going through the newspaper picking houses. He wants these really expensive houses, but slowly realizing it's marking them out. He's like, keep aiming lower, keep going lower. But he wants something. It makes it look like he needs to have a very specific kind of house so he can show to his buddy. He probably has no friends, but when he says buddies, like his co-workers that he talks to. He's the kind of guy that probably talks to his co-workers at the water fountain, and they just tolerate his existence. Yeah. They've mastered that. You know that smile you give to customers? You've worked retail.
Right,
you give to customers, like, I tolerate your existence. Hello. I have to do this.
Grin and nod.
That's what they probably do to him all day. He's kind of like this guy who worked in surveillance, who's a little off, desperately trying to be normal, and it's just not working. Sometimes he can be creepy. You get all of this in that first scene, and then, you know, he gets the house, and to him, he's finally satisfied. He's got a step up in life. He's out of whatever probably crappy apartment he was in. He's a man!
Yeah.
I think he has that ideal from the 50s, you know, huh, I need a house with a lawn and a dog and a wife and 2 kids, and I have a pipe in my hand, you know, and I'll be a man, you know.
Right.
And the vagrant kind of destroys everything.
Yeah.
And it destroys his relationship, it destroys his sanity, it destroys his job, it destroys everything in his past. And Marshall Bell, you know, he was in Twins and Total Recall. But the makeup effects on him are just ghastly. They create like a subhuman. Like, you feel like he's the creatures from Fantastic Four that helped the Mole Man. Just, we haven't seen air or sunlight in years. He is actually fantastic as the vagrant. He doesn't get a whole lot in the first half. He's kind of a mystery. Bill Paxton will come home and just find him in his kitchen. But he's kind of, what would you call it, kind of mousy in asserting himself. So he will be standing there right in front of him just like in fear, but he won't say anything like, get out of my house, like a normal person probably would.
Yeah. Like, what?
He's kind of sheepish in dealing with it. He always wants someone else to deal with it instead of like stepping up and taking care of business.
There are laws now that, it's very strange. You can't kick somebody out of your a property that you own, even if you have an eviction notice. There's some sort of law, like, and I think this movie had a little bit to do with that, just maybe that they had knowledge of it, because he just can't get the vagrant out. And there's something about this movie that's disturbing that wasn't disturbing in the other movie that Wallace did, The Fly.
Yeah.
It's how he used the camera, how he made it part of the movie as opposed to just documenting what's happening. In The Fly, it seems that it was just a fly on the wall kind of a camera. No pun intended, except I did.
So The Fly, you're observing this world as the vagrant you are in this world.
Yeah, and it's the camera is kind of what I like about this era of filmmaking that happened with these independents. Coen Brothers did this too, where they used the camera. I like Raising Arizona. They used the camera as a character almost in the film.
Yeah. Well, do you think the Coen Brothers and Sam Raimi opened that door?
Yes.
That allowed to happen?
Yeah. Because Evil Dead does it as well. Evil Dead 2, especially. Very kinetic movement of camera, or like use of lenses to disorient.
It's necessary to the plot that you feel like Bill Paxton is, where he's losing his mind. Like, you don't, is this real? Is this really happening? Or am I imagining this? Like, you don't even know if what's real for a while in this movie. Do you, is the vagrant real?
Right.
Is, you think is that he maybe a split personality? You know?
You think maybe he is just like slipping?
I think the point of the movie that's my favorite is, you know, when he starts to lose everything and he runs away because he can't get rid of the vagrant. So he runs away from his house for various reasons, which I won't give away. But when he ends up in the trailer park, and it's, you know, I was telling you about this. I have a weird affection for kitschy trailer trash kind of stuff in movies and pop culture.
I wanted you to say cowpunk because you always use it.
Yeah. I was listening to Southern Culture on the skids and stuff like that at the time. And, you know, like B-52s, when they first started, they were kind of like that as well. It's like this weird twisted vision of what the 50s and 60s were like. You know, Tim Burton kind of had that idea of twisting that kitschy world, but very specific on trailer trash kind of, like, they think they're high class.
Pink flamingos in the yard.
Yeah, it's low rent, high class, I guess, if you want to call it that. Like, they're dolled up and everything.
Well, okay, look, they seem to dress like, you know, they put a lot of effort into appearing that way, and it was an appearance when it was an actual real thing in the culture.
Yeah,
it wasn't kitsch for kitsch. It was actually how fashion was. So the beehive hairdos and those.
Oh, well, I think even I think Dolly Parton put it best. What? She had kind of had that look for a while, and she says it takes a lot of money to look this cheap.
There you go. Yes, yes, yes. So that was a thing that. Yeah, especially in the South or the Southwest, even.
Yeah. It's only about, 15 minutes of the movie, and I was absolutely fascinated by it. Like, he starts to enjoy this lifestyle. Like, you know, he grows out of mullets, and you know, he's sitting on the lawn chair, and he's just like, yeah, you know, he's sleeping with his next-door neighbor, who, wow, that's a pervy moment when he handcuffs himself up because he thinks that the vagrant is him.
No, 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 no!
What?
Just grossed out.
Oh.
I'm just exclaiming, no, 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 no!
Yeah, I was like, oh, please stop, please stop, please stop. But he like gets comfortable with his lifestyle, and all of a sudden the vagrant comes back. She's like, okay, did he have another split mentally, or is the vagrant real? They play this trick the whole movie, and it's fascinating. I really, really wish that Chris Wallace had made more movies. Not necessarily in special effects, which he also gave up on. Now he does, like, you know, art museum kind of stuff. He lives up here in Portland.
Oh.
He's not big on the scene, but he does, like, he'll do showings of The Fly and stuff like that with an audience, and he'll do Q&As and stuff like that, and he'll have showings at some of the museums. Kind of walked away from the Hollywood world.
So, The Vagrant hasn't been on DVD or video for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's coming soon to Shout.
No, it is. It's on a 4-pack from Shout Factory. DVD, but they're now putting it out on Blu-ray for the first time.
Yeah.
In a few months here. It's on a 4-set with 3 other movies that I wasn't interested in any way whatsoever, so I just never bought it.
It might be worth getting your hands on.
Oh, it is totally worth it. At the moment, this is my favorite Bill Paxton movie. I am fascinated by The Vagrant. I'm probably going to watch it about 50 more times before the year is done. I was shocked at how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah, you should get the Blu-ray then.
Well, if I had a Blu-ray player, I would.
You should still get it. Might have the DVD with it. They do that sometimes.
I hope there's extras. I hope there's, like, commentary track.
They just released the information last week, I think, and I haven't looked at it.
Well, Shout Factory has that, and Trespass are going to be putting on a Blu-ray this year.
I think they were setting up something with Bill Paxton ahead of time, and then this thing happened, and we're all bummed.
Yeah, well, maybe William Sadler will be part of the Trespass Blu-ray or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm shocked and surprised, but listening to his interview with Marc Maron, he tells you how he had rheumatic fever. Is that the right word? Rheumatic fever as a child, and it did severe damage to his heart.
Oh.
So I'm surprised he actually lived as long as he did.
Well, he lived a really good life as far as his output and his demeanor. Apparently, you know, I like hearing this about actors that you appreciate or you've come to appreciate, because I'll be honest, I for a long time just was neither here nor there about Bill Paxton, and it wasn't recently that I learned to like him or anything. It was within the last 10 or so years, towards the earliest part of those 10 or so years, that I actually started really liking his stuff. But he was like a charming gentleman to everybody.
Yeah. Well, he talks about that too. You know, he was raised to be a proper Southern gentleman. You know, he had good parents and they supported, you know, him deciding to go into acting. But his father encouraged him to be smart about it, have a backup while you're waiting for your career to take off. You know, he took up carpentry and then he ended up working, I think, on Battle Beyond the Stars. And then James Cameron was there and they met each other and they got along really well. And then that led to Terminator, then Aliens and Near Dark. And you know, look, I mean, just, it's amazing how, like, little connections, he was ready. I think Harrison Ford had the same thing. He was a carpenter while he was waiting for his career to take off.
So I think
having a blue-collar job like that keeps your head on your shoulders, you know?
Yeah, I think, Michael, then, if you want to be in movies, you got to be a carpenter. I think that's the lesson.
Actually, with my degree in theater, I did a lot of carpentry. I put together a lot of sets, but my heart wasn't in it because I was a lazy jerk, and look where I am now.
Your heart's got to be in it up until the point where you become an actor, star person, and then you can just ditch it. So that's our thing about Bill Paxton. We'll speckle Bill Paxton movies because he's got a lot that fit the criteria of the other episodes. So we'll speckle those in throughout the year.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Bill Paxton. I know you're not listening to this.
Who knows? Maybe he is. But hey, everybody, you're listening, so that's awesome. Thank you for supporting the show. Retro Rocket Entertainment did hit its third year, and the numbers are growing. And thank you for everybody for commenting and sharing. Video night, not celebrating an anniversary right now, so it's just kind of like, hey, we're in the middle of our 2.5, you know, whatever. But thank you again for all the shares, the likes, the comments, and I thank Andrew for making the show so much better, and for us realizing that 3-hour episodes was torture.
We don't need to travel down that lane again.
Next episode, we have a lot of stuff on our list.
I don't know. What are we doing next? Are you actually going to make me get the list ready to do the relentless action, or are we doing something else?
Yes, let's do the relentless action next. So we got 4 or 5 movies we got on our list. We're not going to tell you yet. We're going to surprise you. But other things we have on our list for the rest of the year, Terror in the City, which we're going to have Trespass, and I have a couple others. I definitely want to talk about Judgment Night. One, we're kicking the ass of, like, you know, Nazi.
Yeah.
The alt
white versus white video like, night versus white supremacy.
And then we got one about big ass bugs.
Yeah, big bugs.
Hey, everybody, I do have a book on Amazon. It's an ebook. You can download it to your Kindle, whatever reader you have. It is Totally True Tales: The Epic Life of Manchester Steel. It's about a compulsive liar and his frustrated editor that's trying to bring him back to reality. It's a short book, not going long, but it's also not expensive. It's only a couple bucks. If you want to buy that, toss some shekels in my little coin bag, whatever. Ah, thank you. And then I can help pay for the show a little bit better. Anything you want
to
plug?
Dark Backward, if you want to point your cursor over to What Did We Just Watch, check out that episode about Dark Backward.
And your t-shirts. I see you create some new t-shirts. I like them.
If you want to find my graphic design work, my t-shirts and all that, go to jimetzko.com. It's spelled with a G-I-M-E-T-Z-C-O. I hope you understand all of those letters strung together equals a weird word, Jimetzko. Thanks for listening to this episode. Please look through and try to find some of these Bill Paxton gems. They're precious. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Doppelganger or secret identity?
Just put a Band-Aid on it.
I did it!
Aha! All right, everybody, take a drink.